Right, good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting. My name is Paula Eat, Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome you all to this evening's meeting on Monday the 7th of October 2024. Welcome to those who have joined us tonight in the public gallery. The time being 5:30pm, I now officially declare the meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council meetings are also live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with Council's policy, I'll ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Yes.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening we have the CEO, Mr Stewart, the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, the Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, our Senior Strategic Planner, Mr Stander, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. Apologies this evening, we have two apologies. Firstly, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, and secondly, Councillor Richardson. We're turning now to page one, confirmation of minutes. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 17, held on the 16th of September 2024, be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Still on page one, workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop on the 23rd of September in relation to the tree bylaw and a further workshop on the 30th of September in relation to the planning scheme. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? Councillor Dean.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I just need to declare a conflict of interest on item currently 13.1 in the agenda due to a personal relationship with the applicants. I'll be removing myself from the room during that discussion.
Thank you very much. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Just declare that the...
bit louder, please. Oh, sorry. I can't hear you.
I just declare that the project officer for the DA 2024-276 contacted me today and I spoke to them and asked me questions and I asked them questions.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Not a conflict of interest, I don't think, but just checking. 16.2 Copping Refuse Disposal Site Joint Authority. I'm Council's proxy on that. On that authority, so I don't believe that's conflict.
No, yep, that's fine. Thank you very much. Now, transfer of agenda items. There has been an error in the agenda. Item 13.1 has been put on the agenda as being currently it's in the section of council sitting as a planning authority. It needs to be moved into open session of council because we need to make the decision not as a planning authority but as a council. So I'm moving that item 13.1 be moved to be the first item in the open session. So it'll come immediately after petitions when we get to officers' reports to council. Could I have a mover and a seconder for that, please? Moved to Councillor Midgley, seconder Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public who's with us this evening wish to ask a question? If you'd like to come to the microphone, and even though we know who you are, if you could state your name and suburb, please, before asking your question.
Mark Donnellan from Huntingfield. It's been 14 years since the completion of the Kingborough Integrated Transport Strategy. Many of the recommendations in that strategy are still valid, but much has changed since 2010, especially with regard to the availability of e-bikes and personal mobility devices. Is this strategy likely to be reviewed and updated, and when?
Yep. So Council has commenced the process for reviewing and updating that. Councillors had a workshop about four or five weeks ago, where we'll be starting the process of updating that, because we accept that it's, while there are some things within that that are still relevant, it's obviously been quite a while since it's been updated, and there's been a number of changes that I think we'd all like to see within that policy. So that work has started. I'm not sure if we have a time frame, CEO, that you can share with us?
Through you, Mayor. No, don't have a time frame on that one, but we can have a chat offline if you like and talk through about the process that we're going through there.
Thank you. Do you have a further question?
Yeah. Does Kingborough Council have any strategy or policy that provides specific consideration to personal mobility devices, their users, and the facilities that council provides?
Not that I am aware of.
It might also help if I clarify personal mobility devices.
I'm well aware as chair of the Access Committee, but CEO, do you want to?
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I don't believe we have anything that specifically covers personal mobility devices in any policy.
Okay. May I clarify what I'm referring
to? Yeah,
sure. The Department of State Growth defines personal mobility devices as things like e-scooters, e-skateboards, and unicycles, and shouldn't be confused with mobility aids like an electric wheelchair.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, no, we don't.
On Saturday the 21st of September at 6 p.m, my friend Rick Gunton, who's with us today, was on his way home on his e-skateboard in need of a charge, and found that all of the power outlets at the Hub and Kingston Park, including the barbecue shelters and toilet block, were either blocked or disabled, and then was unable to charge his personal mobility device and... yeah, went home without power. Why have all of the power outlets from Kingston Park, including the including those mentioned, been blocked or disabled?
Mr. Smee, are you able to assist us with that?
Through you, Mayor, I'm not aware that they've been blocked. I do know that we've had some power outages that may have resulted, but... when you say they've been blocked, have they been...
I can clarify.
..physically unable to plug them in?
I visited the site this morning, so the power outlets at the barbecue shelters have been covered with purpose-made plastic covers that remove access to the power points. And the Hub seemed to be working this morning, so that has changed since. But yes, all of the power points at the barbecue shelters have been effectively removed.
Mr. Smee.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I was unaware that that has happened. We will look into that.
Yeah. Well, if we could take that on notice, that would be great.
Great. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anybody else from the public gallery have any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. So, Valeska Winter from Blackmans Bay. Thank you for the response to my question taken on notice in relation to a possible breach of planning permit conditions. If it's appropriate for me to ask, could I confirm the reason that action was not taken following my first request to the planning authority?
Mr. Smee, are you able to assist us? No, sorry, Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. Until the matter is resolved with the appeal, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to do the enforcement just purely to say you must put it in as it is, because if the newer permit were to go through, it would potentially have some impacts on that landscape area. So it's better that we probably consider the two together. If the appeal against the approval is successful and doesn't go through, then obviously the applicants can reapply with a new proposal. That's not to say we wouldn't do anything for the original approval for the landscaping area. But if it were to go through, then it would make better sense to work with the proponent to make sure that the two marry with each other.
Thank you. Could I just clarify, what date does the 120-day period of time commence from? Has that started from when I first requested the planning authority, or does that start from now in response to the... Sorry, just to clarify, so the question on notice response was that no investigation or action had been taken, and it has now been referred to the planning authority, to planning services. So could you clarify at what date that 120-day period starts from?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, I'm not sure which 120 days is being referred to, but I guess the investigation has started because we certainly pulled the file and got all the details, so we were able to answer the questions, so we are aware of the non-compliance with that condition. So it has commenced.
Thank you. So to clarify, my understanding is when there's been a possible breach of planning permit conditions, the planning authority has 120 days to investigate and take action, and at which point they would then advise the notifier of who has made that request. And if appropriate action hasn't been taken, that person, my understanding was, could then have the right to take their own action. Have I misunderstood that process?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, you'd be referring to the 63B provisions of Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, so it does have in there requirements for council to take actions, commence investigations within that, so that would be the section you're referring to. The exact wording, I'd need to look at the Act, which I'm happy to do and provide a response to you directly if you'd like.
Thank you. And I guess what I'm hoping to clarify is what date has that time frame started from? Thank you.
Further question?
I think that's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. No further questions from the community. Thank you very much. We move now to questions on notice from the public. We had two, the first from Ms. Winter with a response from Ms. Tullamore, and the second one also from Ms. Winter and a response from Mr. Reeve. Members of the community do wish to ask questions, they can submit a question on notice by completing the relevant form on our website or by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Takes us to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question relating to tree planting and subdivisions. So as part of subdivisions, I note most of the time that developers are required to plant a series of street trees in their areas, and as part of different developments, required to plant trees. What happens in regards to that those trees don't, say, survive? And then if, there is a building occurred and then the applicant, the developer there, I guess, doesn't retain those trees either. I guess what happens there? What's the mitigation in regards to the fact they're required to plant the trees, they don't survive, and then a home is built and that homeowner then doesn't keep or retain those trees either?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the process for subdivisions requires quite often that they have to do the landscaping. That's the street trees that you're referring to. It may require other things such as building the footpaths or putting in rain gardens and the like. So when that is completed for each stage, once it's developed to a point, then it goes on to what we call a maintenance period, which is under the Local Government Act. The maintenance period goes for a 12-month period, so the developer is required to maintain it and make sure that it was built right. So as an example, if the footpaths were to crack, they need to repair them. If the drain is blocked and clogged up, before they hand it over to council at the end of the 12 months, they must clear that out. And the same goes for the planting of street trees or any other land. They need to maintain that landscaping and those trees, and should they be damaged by the public or die or be diseased, then they do need to replace them before it's handed over to council. Once it's handed over to council, the council's satisfied and gives them a certificate to say, yes, we're satisfied, you've achieved your maintenance period, then it gets handed over to council, and council becomes the custodian of all those assets, including street trees, and it's council's responsibility to maintain them. If a resident goes and vandalises a tree and cuts it down, damages it, poisons it, which unfortunately we have seen occur, then that's a breach against council's assets, and that would be dealt with, as I understand, under the bylaw. Bylaws are not the area that my department works in, so I'm not... I don't know it that well, but there are certainly elements in there that the street trees would need to go back in. In the event that a resident had wanted to do other landscaping or change the landscaping on a footpath, there is a council policy on that, and that's available on the council website if people want to do something that is different to the standard planting that occurs. And our engineering services would look at those requests in conjunction with our property maintenance and our environment team.
Any further questions? No, thank you. We'll move on. Questions on notice from councillors. There were two. The first from Councillor Dean in relation to Mary's Grange development application with a response from Ms Tyler Moore. And the second one from Councillor Midgley in relation to compostable dog poo bags with a response from Mr Reeve. So open session of council now adjourns and the planning authority of council commences at 5:46. PM. So that takes us to page 75, DA 2024-276, development application for demolition of existing building and construction of 22 warehouses and associated infrastructure and works at 65 and 12 Patriarch Drive, Huntingfield, with a recommendation on page 103. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Dean and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Thank you, Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. As you've pointed out, this is for works at 65 and 12 Patriarch Drive in Huntingfield. It is for demolition of existing building and construction of 22 warehouses and associated infrastructure and works. During the advertising period, there were three representations which covered a number of issues, mainly around storage, the impact on trees on adjacent land, issues with parking and work that was going to happen outside the title boundaries. The responses to those are dealt with in this report adequately on pages 99 to 102 of the report. The recommendation here is for approval with conditions, of which there are 29. And in the interest of keeping it brief, the conclusion, as the report states on page 103, that it has demonstrated compliance to all relevant acceptable solutions and performance criteria for the light industrial zone and relevant codes, and is recommended for approval with conditions. So I'll move the report and look forward to councillors unpicking and asking questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova, and then Councillor Antoli after that.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question is around the proximity to the Peter-Murray Reserve and the potential impact on 40-spot partaloads. It says on page 87 that when the agricultural impact assessment was made, there was a recognition of high conservation value trees. However, after council's assessment, the proximity of those trees, and I'm paraphrasing, the proximity of the trees to Peter Murrell meant that they were essentially upgraded, by my reading, to being very high conservation value trees by council's environmental planning department. And all other Eucalyptus viminalis trees with a DBH over 25 centimetres on the adjacent land to the subject site were similarly determined to be very high conservation value. So this is a two-pronged question. The first is, what are the specific environmental impact assessments that are done both on the subject site, or particularly on the subject site? So that the first aspect of my question is basically, are people out there, has somebody gone out onto the site to look for the numbers of 40 spotted partlets that are breeding in that area? Obviously, it mentions in the report that these are one of only two critical breeding sites in anywhere, Bruny Island and Peter Murrell. So my first question is, can we please unpack what actually goes in to assess the number and the sightings of 40 spotted partlets on that site or near that site?
Ms Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the application is the application is slightly different than if it was building in that high conservation area, so they would be required to do a full flora fauna assessment and more of an environmental management requirement. But because of the zoning that it's in, it doesn't trigger that, but the arborist report was triggered. So the information that we have about the 40-spot pardalote, as an example, certainly our environmental planners, who are all highly qualified in the field, have a lot of knowledge about the habitat and so forth about that and where they are found. We also use, now I have to apologise because I'm probably going to get the name wrong because I'm trying to do it off the top of my head, but the Natural Values Atlas that talks about locations of 40-spot pardalote, and there certainly has been a number of studies, and council, as council, not the planning authority, has a lot of information and data about the presence of 40-spot pardalote in that area. So that gets brought in for the environmental planners to consider who contribute towards the assessment.
Thank you. And through you, ma'am, my second question was around this light industrial zoning. So as has just been explained to us, basically the Peter Murrell has a totally different zoning, as it's a reserve, as opposed to this area on Patriarch Drive, which is a light industrial zone. My question really is, can we please unpack what conversations have been had with the proponent in order to try and mitigate potential impacts? Because from my reading of the report, it sounded like there was some compromise and conversation back and forth around moving things and basically trying to protect natural vegetation as much as possible with the aim of protecting the 40-spotted pardalote. Can that be elucidated? If that's a true assessment, can that please be elucidated? Like, what were those conversations and what has the proponent agreed to compromise in order to try and protect 40-spotted pardalotes on that site?
Through you, Mayor, I can't be specific about the conversations because I personally wasn't in those meetings. But from speaking with staff, I understand that they did speak with them about possibilities and opportunities. It is a challenge always when we have two zones that abut one another that have completely different drivers or purposes. And we have to be mindful to stay in the lane of what the zone of the property is, but that doesn't mean we can't have the acknowledgement and the effort and the conversation with the proponents about recognising, as an example, Peter Murrell's there and what the impacts might be. So my understanding is, and it's alluded to in the report, that there were some conversations about that, and certainly where it encroaches into the council reserve, it's going to have limited impacts with respect to the service connections that they're required to do in the council reserve, so it should have no impact. And they're also going to do some landscaping, which includes species which will contribute to the Peter Murrell area as well as contribute to the value of the site, because we know that established vegetation is a value within the site. But light industrial obviously brings with it an expectation of a fair bit of development to occur on those sites. And so we're trying to work through that with all the proponents along there and other things that we might do on other sites. We haven't put any conditions on this one. It's a certain type of fencing types to stop the birds colliding with the certain types of fences, or make them coloured so they don't collide with them as much, trying to avoid glazing or the glazing you can see through for bird collision. So there's a few different ones, and obviously there's a lot of controls to try and protect any off-site amenity impacts, such as stormwater or rubbish and waste going into the reserve or any natural, like Coffee Creek as an example. We do what we can, and I understand that the applicant has come along as much as they could for this one.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, and thanks for that answer. Yes, I think it's... So my understanding is it says at the bottom of page 79 that a permit was issued for warehouse and container storage on the 10th of June 2008, and in that included entering into a Part 5 agreement which affected vehicle traffic at the rear of the subject land site, and also that's where they first mentioned the application was approved on the basis that there would be no removal of any Eucalyptus viminalis from the site, as these trees provide habitat for the 40-spotted pardalotes, of which there are a colony in that area, one of only two sites in Tasmania, the other being Bruny Island, that these trees are to remain and must not be lopped, and removal of these trees will require a permit from the threatened species unit, as well as a tree removal application from council prior to any vegetation disturbance. So that's basically the context. I think it's one of those things that we often lament about, kind of a death by a thousand cuts when vegetation is removed. But I'm really cognizant of the zoning of that area. I went down to the, you know, park to the bottom of Patriarch at the cul-de-sac there and walked through that up and down Coffee Creek. And so I've looked at the site extensively, and I understand the trees that are planned for removal. I think it's one of those things where we're trying to strike a compromise, and so I'm comforted to some extent that at least there's conversations happening and a general awareness, hopefully, from the proponent about the significance of that particular colony of birds. I mean, we're talking about very few left on planet Earth, and so whatever we can do to try and protect them, we should. But, of course, it is a light industrial zone, and, of course, surrounding it is other similar type buildings in that light industrial space. The other thing to be aware of is, I thought it was a bit of a wake-up call for me, I can't yet find the page, but talking about parking, the reason why there's no payment in lieu of parking for this particular development that's been proposed is because there's, if my reading is correct, there's no, I guess, master plan for parking in that area, and therefore council kind of couldn't collect money in lieu of providing parking because there's no plan for parking that council has in that area. Now, when I go down Patriarch Drive, particularly obviously during the weekdays, it's pretty chock-a-block on the sides of the roads there, the parking on that street. So I just kind of wanted to ask more broadly, is it true that obviously we're just talking about this particular proposal, but is it true that if we did have a plan for parking in that area, then there would have been a parking in lieu payment that the proponent would have had to have made? Is that correct?
Through you, Mayor, the planning scheme provides a mechanism to get cash and lieu for parking, which is complemented by a cash and lieu parking policy, which is available on our website. The policy makes reference that it only applies to Kingston because that's the only area that's been identified to date that we would invest money in providing parking. Council can't just take the money and put it in coffers and spend it. It needs to go in towards its plans, which we have for Kingston. Whilst that's not locked down, it's certainly a principle that there will be parking. For Patriarch Drive, if there was a parking plan for the industrial estate as an example, yes, you could develop a parking plan for that, and what council could potentially do is they would purchase a block of land and then build a car park on it for everyone to use. Is that good use of the industrial area? We'd need to balance that up. It would mean that each individual property would need to provide as much parking. So does that mean they've got greater capacity? Is that better economic return for the community, well, for the businesses who are in our community? Or would it be inconvenient because it would be located here and the businesses are all located so far behind that they're less likely to work? It's not like an activity centre where we'd like to encourage all the residents to walk around our activity centres and be part of our activity centres. That's less likely in an industrial estate. Given that we're not going to do a cash and lieu contribution unless council was to have a change of mind, we do try as best we can to make sure adequate parking for each of the uses is provided. So this can cause conflict because some new businesses that move into the industrial estates or business estates, but that, you know, I don't have the space to build that, but I want to have, well, you can't have practitioners, I want to have whatever use it is, but I want to have so many people there and I'm not going to provide the parking. So it's important that then we need to be strong on that and say, well, there's no other parking provided. And if you use up all the street parking, that's not fair on the other businesses. So we do try and push as much as we can for people to provide the car parking that they should be providing. And in this particular instance, there's a reduction of 2 spaces, but out of 40. Given the type of use, we think that's acceptable in this instance to allow a reduction.
Thank you. Thank you for that answer. That makes a lot of sense. And through you, Mayor, just coming towards the end of my contribution, just to say that the conditions relating to noise emissions make sense to me. The conditions relating to hours of operation make sense to me. Broadly, obviously, my main concern was with the environmental impact and the 40 spotted partlet load, but there's a general recognition that I think we can all appreciate about trying to strike a balance between those impacts and also the recognition of that zoning. Now, I think if I had my magic wand, I probably wouldn't have placed a light industrial zoning abutting hard up against a nature reserve of really impressive natural values. I believe that Peter Murrell has the world's oldest recorded long-nosed bandicoot living in it. I can stand to be corrected on that, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. And not to mention that, you know, these really endangered birds that we have. So obviously it's an incredibly important space, and we're very lucky in Kingborough to have the Peter Murrell Reserve. But we also have a shortage of industrial land, light zone industrial land, and that particular area is already has a lot of really some really positive businesses. And so taking into account the balance that we're trying to strike between all those things, I'm supportive of this application.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next, I had Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor, and thanks to the officers for the report. I do appreciate the developers spending the money and time in our community to build, and I am broadly in favour. I have a question around officers' response to Aboriginal heritage. It's discussed on page 102, and it is item 2.1.10. Officers' response, basically, to summarise, no Aboriginal heritage documentation has been required of the developer. Is that correct?
Ms. Tolemal.
Through you, Mayor, that is correct. There's no mechanism under the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act to require that.
Okay. And as I understand it, the entire Huntingfield development area, especially along the rivulet, is noted as having Aboriginal significance. Is that not right?
Ms. Tolemal.
Through you, Mayor, I couldn't confirm whether that's correct or not. I do know of sites in the Huntingfield area that we have registered Aboriginal sites, but the statement I couldn't confirm.
I'm aware of other developers that have all been required to provide Aboriginal reports in Huntingfield for what I would consider to be quite minor extensions to an existing dwelling. And this one is substantial because it obviously involves disturbance. So I'm a bit concerned about the response, because the response seems to indicate that there's no obligation for the developer to provide reports, because there are two separate issues. There's the planning scheme and then there's the Act. My understanding of the Aboriginal Act is that council's role is to actually ensure that there's no non-compliance. So I'm concerned why others have been all asked to provide Aboriginal reports, but this particular developer, which is substantial, has not been asked by council to provide the same.
Ms. Tolemal.
Through you, Mayor, whilst not relevant to this application, as we're in discussion of this application, I welcome evidence or sightings of where it's been asked, because I don't think it is correct. If there is a registered property already on site which has already been registered under the Aboriginal Heritage Act, formerly known as the Relics Act, then they must comply with that. So if we become aware of a registered site or artefacts, you know, such as scatters or significant trees, then we work with the applicant, raise it with them to work around it. And the reason for that is, it's no good if we issue a planning permit and then it conflicts with the Aboriginal requirements and they can't do the development. So it's much better and proactive for us to work with them, make them aware of it, find out what Aboriginal Heritage Act is going to require of them. But we don't go and require new assessments to be done. There are mechanisms and provisions provided by the state government that allows any person, so any resident or business or anyone that's going to develop, you can go and do a desktop search by typing in your address, and it will tell you whether there's any artefacts that are registered on there or the likeliness of that.
Mm. I am not trying in any way, shape or form trying to throw a hurdle or a roadblock for this development to go ahead. I'm looking at is a potential inconsistency in the response from the officers, and I'm just trying to understand, because even if the planning scheme does not explicitly require Aboriginal assessments, there's still an obligation under the Act for developers to assess the impacts of any Aboriginal heritage, and it's council's role to suggest that the lack of specific development standards means that Aboriginal heritage can't be assessed as part of the application, I don't believe is good enough, when it's often our responsibility to guide the applicant to rule out the potential conflict, as has been done to three separate developments in Huntingfield, three separate developers, one of which contacted me incensed at the expense of the report, which I believe was $8,000, to extend his substantial warehouse 2.5 metres in length. So I'm trying to understand why, for something like that, they would be required, and why this developer, which is much larger development and real disturb the land, is not required by council. Why this inconsistency?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, I would like it substantiated which ones they are so we can have a look at which ones they are. But I do remind Councillor Antoli we're sitting as the planning authority at the moment for this application. So I'm more than happy to take it as a separate matter to this DA and we can find that information, whether you want that to be a question on notice or without notice, we can look at that. But I just think we need to be mindful to make it separate to this application.
It's separate to this application, and knowledge is power. And so when you're aware that there are inconsistencies and we are looking at a particular planning approval, that knowledge of inconsistencies is right for me to bring up as a member of the planning authority. So as you're aware of it, so as your position is that this particular development does not require any... does not even require a request from council to rule out Aboriginal heritage potential in the land.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act, which is the assessment we're doing it under, and the planning scheme has no requirement for that. That does not negate the owner's obligations under the Aboriginal Heritage Act, relevant to Tasmania. They still need to comply with that. So what can happen sometimes is that, I mean, they should investigate beforehand if they think they're in an area of high probability of having it. Now, other jurisdictions such as Victoria has rules, and theirs is built into planning. They say if you're within 200 metres of a waterway, 50 metres of an artefact, you have to get an Aboriginal assessment done, a cultural heritage management plan, which, noting, are really expensive, but it's what the legislation of Victoria is. There isn't here. If you go onto your site and you disturb or find something, you are obligated under the Aboriginal Heritage Act. Now, that's not... I don't administer that act.
Yep.
Local government does not administer that act. So it's not our responsibility to do that. Like I said before, we try and raise with people if we are aware of artefacts on the site or near to the site, which may be the case for the other matters that you were talking about, but until I know what they are, I can't say one way or the other. Yes, like we do with lots of things, we try and give people the heads up, which sometimes come back as a complaint, as in it's not in our lane. We try and tell them things about the Urban Drainage Act. If that's an issue, that's not actually a planning matter, but it's something that comes up. We try and tell them about the Building Act. It's something that comes up, isn't related. We tell them about the Food Act if they've got a restaurant. That's not an obligation for planning to have to tell them, but we do it as good service to those applicants or those potential applicants. So absolutely we... cover a lot of bases, and town planners seem to have to be jack of all trades to try and assist these people. But is there an onus on us if we don't flag that there might be an Aboriginal effect? No, there's not.
I'm struggling.
I'd love to see the legislation change for it to be better wedded,
yeah.
But this is the legislation we're stuck with.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I suppose there's a part of me that wants to protect the developer from council making mistakes so that it is actually appealed after we approve it by members of the community who may latch on to the fact that our response seems to be... in my opinion, our council response seems to imply that the Aboriginal heritage considerations are irrelevant to the planning application, and I think that could be misleading. Because I think it would be prudent for council to ensure that the potential Aboriginal heritage impacts are considered, and as they have been with so many others. And that's why I bring it up. As a planning authority, we're meant to be looking at the risk. And of all the members on this council, I'm probably the last person that want to throw any form of a roadblock on a development in this community. But I just needed to bring that up because I've had several people approach me about this particular issue. Is it possible for us to make an error here in this particular case for someone to latch onto it and actually go through an appeals process after we've approved it? And what is the blowback to us, if any?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. Representatives can lodge an appeal against council's decision. They can appeal it against the conditions. So, yes, a member of the public a representative could try and go down the road of appealing this as a particular one. As we've said time and time again in council meetings, we offer the service, even if the decision is against us, to tell them what the process is, how it works. We give them some guidance about whether it is or isn't a matter. Now, we can't say definitively, because that would just be remiss of us to say definitively. If the residents were appealing on the Aboriginal matter solely, my advice to them would be, I really don't think this is going to get up. This isn't really a planning matter. You can look at other decisions, but if you want to feel safer in the advice I'm giving you, we recommend that you either ask the tribunal or yourself. The tribunal's not great at giving out advice, to be fair.
Yep.
Or you can go and ask a planning consultant, or you can go and ask a lawyer. Now, we're not saying they have to do that too, because it can get very costly. But at the same time, we appreciate that sometimes people like to throw a bit of bias on this, as if planning is plotting something and we are just trying to discourage them on purpose because we don't want to go to appeal. Now, that wholly is untrue. We have nothing, officers have got nothing to gain from planning applications, but we try and provide that advice. But some people might feel a bit unsure, so that's where they should probably go and see a consultant or a lawyer. But we would steer them in that direction. If they get the decision tonight and they turn around and lodge at the tribunal tomorrow, well, I've got no impasse on that. So what would occur, the first part of a tribunal hearing, there's three. The first is the initial hearing, which is just to set out, you might say, oh, I want better particulars, or I don't understand what that is, or we may raise, I don't think that's a planning matter. And the tribunal themselves can say, well, sorry, Mr. Smith, but that really isn't a planning matter. So they try and set them on the right path as well, so they don't waste their time and their money, because it can be very to people. But if they want to pursue it, then they can pursue it. But we would hope at that initial hearing that we would raise any matters that weren't planning matters, and then you would go to mediation, and we try and mediate with people to try and get outcomes. But some people will just cut the mediation off too early and go to appeal, or there's just quite clearly not a mediation that's going to occur, so they would go to full hearing. So, yes, we provide as much assistance as we can to the residents or representatives, and we're happy to do that in this case with the representatives as well.
Okay. Well, thank you for allowing me to flag what I thought was an anomaly from my experiences, and apart from that question, I've got no issues with the report.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a quick question around condition number 22, where it talks about the permit holder must promptly remove any graffiti on the subject site which is visible to the public and keep the site free from graffiti at all times to the satisfaction of council. I guess my question is that a standard condition that we're seeing, or is it to do with the size of the wall or the location? And also, is there parameters around how much graffiti would be in place before council went and said, do something about it?
Ms. Tylemore.
Through you, Mayor, the condition is generally only applied to commercial, industrial type premises, not residential. And yes, it does have to do with its location, known the area of blank walls and so forth. It is actually a standard condition out of the Victorian Standard Conditions issued by the state government. That's where it came from before it landed here. We have had in the chamber before where it's been taken off a planning permit condition, so councillors obviously can see fit to do that. And then in opposite, we've had a lot of discussion from councillors about concerns about how much graffiti there is. Obviously I don't think it's an unreasonable condition to put on there, otherwise we wouldn't have endorsed for it to go on there. I think it's appropriate. How much has to be on there? It'd have to come down to an officer's call. If it's a single tag, it probably isn't, written in a whiteout pen. It'll be on its scale of what it is to try and do that. But there are a lot of premises that don't have that condition, so we don't have the power to try and get them to clean up all that graffiti that we've got throughout Kingborough at the minute.
Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Bain. Nothing further. Any further contributions? Councillor Dean, did you want to sum up? No, I'm going to put the recommendation. It's as printed on page 103. It was moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. The Planning Authority of Council now
adjourns at 6:14 p.m. and open session recommences at 6:14 p.m. Page 155, petition still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. And also on the same page, petitions received in the last period at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Still on page 155 now, we're going back to the item which we had moved, which is request for consent to remove one large Eucalyptus arvata tree on CT 162233-201, to remove one large Eucalyptus arvata tree and to build outside the building envelope on CT 179428-1 at 14 Bonnievale Drive, Howden, and just indicating that Councillor Dean has declared that he has a conflict of interest and has left the room for this item. So I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. A mover in Councillor Cordova, and I'm looking for a seconder in Councillor Antoli. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll take the report as read, but basically what this is a request for consent to remove one large Eucalyptus arvata tree, and to build outside the building envelope. I've been down to this site, and basically that the whole area of that subdivision is in much the same context. We're talking about residential development. One of the very special things about Kingborough is our skylines, our ridgelines, and great areas of natural remnant vegetation, and it's critically important, not just for the habitat, for animals. It's not just important for biodiversity, but it's also important for our health and well-being, and countless studies talk about that, whether it's encouraging people to spend more time outdoors, whether it's helping filter and clean our air. There's a million different reasons why it's a great thing that we in Kingborough have areas of natural areas in our neighbourhoods and in our suburbs. So it's critically important that we maintain vegetation where we can. I think the thing that probably convinced me on this occasion that this was a reasonable request is it appears on page 83 where it says that this proposal complies with clause 9.7.1 as follows. In light of the existing location of the infrastructure and the design parameters for the site, there is considered to be no practical and reasonable alternative for providing the infrastructure for the site. And so it's basically saying, you know, I stood outside that site on the weekend, and you basically have three trees, one of which is what I would consider to be a reasonable size as a habitat tree, but you can see quite clearly when you're in the context of the site that alternatives would be quite difficult if you are planning on building a house there. So I can see within the report the reasons why they've come to the recommendation, the planning officers have come to the recommendation that they have. Can I just hear briefly if there were any context to add around the kind of negotiations that have taken place in terms of alternatives? The report is fairly, succinct when it talks about the fact that there's no practical or reasonable alternatives, but is it possible to extrapolate on that just a little bit and explain to us were alternatives tested and why did we come to this conclusion that has been arrived at?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, I wasn't part of the actual conversations with the applicant, but they did come back and amend the plan. I was just trying to find the section in the report that says it, but they did change the design to be able to retain another tree. Just having a look. It's most likely in the... So 4.7, it talks about the applicant sending final amended plans later, which was showing the dwelling now sitting in a different location to reduce the impact on tree 21.
Councillor,
so 4.7 in the report.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Well, I'm happy to open this up to conversation from other councillors now, and if I do have other questions, then I can ask them. But I guess to summarise, I think that... again, you know, it kind of refers back to that death by a thousand cuts, but if you look at the site context of this particular site, Howden has no doubt changed a lot over time, and, you know, I visit the area fairly frequently, and certainly when I was in I guess I've been going to that area for more than 20 years, and sure enough, there's a lot more development now than there ever was. But if you kind of look at the context of this site, it's surrounded by residential houses. It sounds to me like there'll be a plan for residential houses, and this is one of those side effects of having residential houses in residential areas. So I'm comfortable with this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next, Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova has answered a couple of my questions. I still have one more. Could council officers... So obviously there's a covenant that says, look, you can't touch the trees unless there are some specific circumstances. Is it fair that permission is being granted because of the triggering of what is in our report is 4.8AII? Is that fair? That's what's triggered basically the approval. There's no other feasible alternative location or design to put the trees, and an offset needs to be paid. Is that essentially the reasoning behind council's approval?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. Nothing's been approved. That's why it's in the council chamber.
So I mean, recommendation.
Oh,
forgive me.
Yes. Yes, that is the main reason.
The main trigger. Okay.
Yes.
And which reflects on what Council Cordova said about it being satisfied under that particular part of the planning scheme. Okay. Thanks.
Anything further? No. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just I'd like to thank the developer for taking the time to look at the impact of the trees and to reduce the number of trees that are impacted. And yes, I am a local resident of that area for over 20 years and am aware when this subdivision was first put in place and the number of residents that put in responses in regards to protecting the trees on that site. And I guess it is one of those things that we do see. Homes are a basic human right that is really important. But over that time, I have seen a number of significant trees removed and street trees removed as well that the developer was required to plant. Homes are a basic human right, and I just really thank the developer to look at the impact of the trees and reduce the impact.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Anything further? Councillor Cordova, did you want to sum up? No? I'm going to put the recommendation then moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. If somebody could please alert Councillor Dean that we have finished. So that then takes us to... I'll just wait until we've got Councillor Dean back. Councillor Dean has returned to the room at 6:22. Welcome back. Takes us to exhibition of the Kingborough Draft Local Provisions Schedule with a recommendation on page 160. I've got a mover in Councillor Street and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. And Councillor Street, before you begin, I did have a request from somebody the other day on social media to say, could Councillor Street please speak up? They said they could hear every other councillor and staff member except for you. And I said that I would particularly ask you to use your large parenting voice, please.
Thank you.
Louder, yep.
I was told about that before the meeting.
Thank you.
And then was about to ignore it because I've forgotten already. But I will move the microphone closer.
And
I did suggest
speak
that
louder.
Maybe they won't be happy with what they've got to hear once they can hear me. But
thank you, Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I move the motion before us with some excitement, given that we've been on this path for now some over 5 years. There are not too many of us around the table who were, in fact, here when the process started. It's been that long. But we're here tonight to note that the Tasmanian Planning Commission have directed Council to exhibit the Kingborough Draft Local Provision Schedule. For those people who might be listening that aren't aware of the changes that have been happening in the Tasmanian planning system over almost the last 10 years, in 2015, the Tasmanian Parliament legislated changes to the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act, which introduced a statewide planning scheme for Tasmania. As part of that planning scheme, there are two components. The state planning provisions, which are the planning provisions that are, or soon will be, hopefully common to every council area in Tasmania, together with a local provision schedule for each local government area, which consists of both the local rules that might apply, so the written rules that might apply to a particular local government area, as well as the zoning maps that shows where particular provisions of the scheme and zones apply. We've been through a process with the Tasmanian Planning Commission over the last 5 years, developing that draft local provision schedule before it's exhibited to the public, and the public get their opportunity to comment on that. And certainly that's part of what we're here tonight to do, is to encourage the public to make comment on that draft local provision schedule and provide representations that will then be reviewed before being presented back to the Tasmanian Planning Commission for the Tasmanian Planning Commission to make a final decision on the adoption or otherwise of the local provision schedule and any other modifications that the Planning Commission might direct to be made. That's an important point, is that ultimately the decision about the local provision schedule is not one that's made by council, but one that is made by the Tasmanian Planning Commission as an independent statutory authority. Usually I am loath to do things like ask staff to please provide their comment on this item, but because of the complexities of the process that we've been through so far and the process that we're going to go through, could staff please provide some comment on the process from here in terms of exhibition, and noting that we have heard as councillors about all of the things that council are going to do to engage the public during this process. And I have to say, looking at the things that we are going to do and the things that other council areas have done, certainly looks like Kingborough is going to be head and shoulders above the rest in terms of the work that we're going to do to engage with our residents. If we could get some comment about the things that we're going to do and how that will feed into the process, please.
Mr. Stander, I think Councillor Street was looking at you for a response to that. No, Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Everyone.
Through you, Mayor, thank you for the question. Yes, we are also equally as excited. The planning scheme was imminent when I started, and I've been here almost 8 years, so I'm very excited that it's got to this stage. Quite right in the comments that were made with respect to the different parts, the LPS and the SPPs. For those who are less familiar with it, we do have a lot of information on our website trying to explain it as best we can, what that means, what the different parts of the scheme mean, including what is a zone, what's an overlay, how to look at the mapping. There's a supporting report that tells you also about how it was applied, because there's certain rules that the state government put together about where you could apply different zones and codes and so forth. So we have a lot of information there, and we can certainly assist anyone navigating that or further explaining that if it's if you're not an online looking sort of person, that's fine, we can do that. So from here, the exhibition, we've been directed by the State Government, by the Planning Commission, to do the public exhibition. It will go for 60 days. So that means it will go from this Wednesday, 9th of October, through to the 9th of December. During that 60-day period, we have officers that are always available to assist the public. So they can call us, email us, they can visit our council office. We're also going to have information sessions available to the public in 4 different locations to try and spread it out across the municipality, not just have it in Kingston. And we've chosen times that bleed from business hours to not business hours, because we appreciate people different times, because there's all sorts of part-time workers, people with kids, people that work shift work and so forth. We're trying to accommodate that. But if people can't come to the information session, no need to panic, because we provide the service throughout that 60 days anyway. The information session really is more of a broad overview. We'll have some information about how to navigate the website or navigate the mapping. It'll have some broad information about what zones and overlays are. But it's not really intended for those really in-depth conversations about, now I really want to build a caboose down here and a house over here and I want to put a shed here, can I do it? That's not what the information session's for, because we just don't have the resource to do that in that, and it would take up everyone else's time. So if you have specific questions about your caboose and your shed, then certainly you can make a time with one of our officers or contact us or email us. And we also have an online queries button, so you can put it through that way and we'll get back to you through that. So the exhibition, that's what we're doing. In addition to that, we'll have a lot of social media releases. I'm sure that the paper's listening tonight, and possibly we'll do a press release about that in the paper. We're also obligated to put formal notices in the public notice section of the Mercury twice. For all those people that read public notices in the Mercury, that'll be in there. So we're required to do that. And there's certain requirements about things we must have available. So we have to have them available in our office, and we are duplicating that in our Alana office, even though we don't have to. This is our primary office. But everything else will be online for people to access, and they can get on to the mapping, which has a lot of hyperlinks, so that when you look up your property, 9 Smith Street, you can click on what it is the planning scheme is today, and then you can click on what we're proposing the planning scheme will be, so you can look at the documents comparatively. Now, we couldn't just have a fact sheet that says, oh, this is what's going to change, because there's so many elements to it. It's so long and in-depth that we just can't do that. But if people are having trouble navigating that, then certainly we can assist them with that. So the 60-day exhibition period will go. People could put representations in. If you want to be considered, you must put a written representation in. If there are people that struggle with literacy, then we are happy to assist with that, and we can provide other means. We're happy to do that. But it must be in writing so that you're a party to the hearings. If you're not a party, if you haven't put a written representation in, your concerns aren't going to be heard. It is set up for the layperson to do it, so you don't need to go to a consultant to do it. You can write it yourself. If you write things like, I think the setbacks are too big, write that. We know what that means. We can interpret that. You don't have to know that it's clause 4.6.3A3. Some people will want to do that. Some groups want to get a consultant to do it. That's fine as well. They're welcome to do that. But it is set up for the layperson, and then same with the hearing. So once the exhibition period finishes, we council officers, we consider all the representations, and we get to write a report that comes to the council meeting that summarises all the submissions that have been put in, and we may also make recommendations of things that might change. Now, we have every expectation that there's going to be changes to the draft, because with over 19,000 properties, unfortunately, we just don't have the capacity to zoom into every single person's property. So there may be some properties that will change from this zone to that zone, or the code, or maybe there's an error, or maybe there's a mapping error, those sorts of things. So people can raise them. We're fine with that. We're expecting that to occur, because we can't look at them all. So in that report that comes to council, we may come back with recommendations and say, oh, well, actually, this zoning wasn't appropriate because of this historic matter, or we didn't know something like contaminated land that occurred on certain sites. It's not on our records previously. All sorts of things can go in there, and we come back to the councillors, and that's the 35F report. And the councillors then can consider that. They may want to make comments or any possible changes, and then that report goes to the Planning Commission. So they're not deciding, they're not locking in what the changes are. They're simply considering, hearing what the public has said, and the councillors have access to every representation, which I'm sure they will all read, and consider that in conjunction with the report, and then it goes to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission gets to read all the representations as well, and reads our report and our recommendations, and then they'll hold public hearings. Now, we expect that the public hearings will probably not occur till, say, March or April. I mean, it's up to them when they do it, but we've got 60 days to do our report, which brings us into late January, and by the time they've considered that and then set up the meetings. But people will be notified. You'll receive notification if you've put a representation in, and you can come to the hearing. The hearings, again, are set up for the lay person, the ordinary person, ordinary residents to go to it. You say it as it is. We can certainly assist people with what to expect on the day if they want that, if they want to know, you know, should I say this or shouldn't I say that. We can provide some guidance, but it is generally open for people, and the Planning Commission will provide some direction and some guidance to people as well so that they're on track and they're sticking to what their representation was. And then following that, it's likely the Planning Commission would make a decision, and that may come with changes from the draft or not. And then it comes in, and then it's in place. So we don't really expect we're going to see it probably before June next year coming in.
Councillor Street.
Thank you.
I think.
Thank you.
Mr. Stander is going to add something.
Through May, yes. I think that was a mouthful and it summarised it quite well. But I think I kind of want to use this opportunity to also just address some of the concerns and people that I've been speaking with lately. I think our invite, and that's the purpose of this report, is to invite people to make their representations. Yes, they are part of the planning scheme that is transitional. It's coming from the older parts of the planning or the current planning scheme. However, we would like people to raise those issues if they have issues. It's an open invite. I spoke with the Commission this afternoon, and they did indicate that every representation that we receive, they will consider. So I guess I just want to add to that. So if we come back with a report after the exhibition period to Council, there will be some recommendations, and we will forward all representations to the Commission, no matter what the recommendation is from Council. It will be forwarded to the Commission for their consideration.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, nothing much further from me except to say that, just to pick up on a point that Ms. Tyler Moore made, yes, councillors are going to receive those representations, and for my part, and I don't want to speak for my colleagues, but I'm sure, given the importance of this matter, we will be very carefully considering those and then any representations and suggestions that are made to the Commission arising out of them. So I suppose the point is, please don't anyone think that making a representation is a pointless exercise. They're going to be very, very carefully considered.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor, and I'd like to echo what Councillor Street said, acknowledging the work that the staff have put into this. It's all good and well for us and the public to be upset and annoyed by things going a certain direction that we're not fully aware of or not appreciative of, but there are real human beings who actually do have a good heart behind the scenes working diligently to try and make this process work. There is, in some ways, this was a proverbial sandwich handed to us by the TPC, and there has been quite a lack in clarity given to us as a council on how to handle certain matters. And we, as Councillor Street has mentioned, we will take this seriously, and this would have to be one of the biggest pieces of work that the planning team have had to undertake since 2015. And I want to acknowledge that and thank them for that, and particularly our strategic planner as well for being, I suppose, the main project officer on this. I have some questions, and this is a big piece of work, and I'm excited for the public exhibition to go out. So questions through you, Mayor. Have we as a council decided whether we are going to email our database, which is not just those who wanted to know about, I think was mentioned, the LPS or the LCZ, for example, but are we going to go further and email our database to let them know of what's going on?
The CEO.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Thanks for the question. So we are not emailing out the database that we've obtained to send out our rates notices. The terms and conditions that we obtained those email addresses on does not extend to notification about things like the planning scheme. And it may be considered as inequitable to the people that don't receive their rates notices digitally. So we won't be emailing out.
Thank you.
Councillor Antoli.
We talked about representation. Is there a person who is not permitted to give a representation, or better or more clearly, whose representation won't be considered? Hypothetically, if you don't live in Kingborough or don't own a property in Kingborough.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, there's nothing in the Act to prevent any particular person or party putting in representations. So, yes, they can be outside the municipality.
Okay.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. I have a question regarding, so there are some, we know from the report and from what's already been mentioned that some zones are off the bus and some new zones are on the bus. One of the controversial zones, and I use the term controversial because people have been upset about it, it's not my personal opinion, I don't have a dog in the race, is the LCZ zone. Does, when a new zone comes on board, especially one where we have to make a subjective determination of what is a landscape value, is there a requirement in the process of working out that overlay that we should consult with the community to decide together what we consider together is a landscape value?
Ms. Tullamore. Or Mr. Stander. Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor. Thanks for the question. That's a good one. I guess, and the best way to answer this is to echo the message from the Commission. And so the Commission's asked us to exhibit this document and the mapping, and there are a couple of new zones in the new planning scheme, and the message that the Commission wants is put it out on exhibition now. It's new zones for our municipality, and this is the time and opportunity for people to actually provide feedback on that. So use the representations to flag any concerns, and that will be worked through the hearing process. So in terms of, I guess, elements like, you know, what is appropriate for landscape and what is scenic amenity and so forth, I think we've acknowledged before, and it will be in a supporting document, that it can be quite subjective. And so we're quite upfront with that and we acknowledge that. I guess we've got to a point now where we've got some mapping that the Commission provided to us, and the message, once again, is very clear. We want to get the feedback from the community. So they're very likely to be some changes to the LCZ zoning as part of the hearing process, but we need to get feedback from our community, both in support or objecting or raising concerns about that zoning, but equally some of the other zones. The agricultural zone is a new zone as well. And it will be broadly applied across Brunei Island. So similar to that, we would suggest that people put in their representations so we can... Thank you. To put in the representations so it can be considered. So short answer is the mapping is not final, and this is our opportunity to provide that feedback.
Yeah, thank you. So just to be clear, we have not, at this stage or at any point in the past, ever done any consultation with the community about the landscape conservation zone. So this is essentially our first, can I use the term consultation? Is this our first chance for consultation with the community? Because basically you're asking for feedback and you're saying things could change.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, this is the one and only exhibition period provided to us under the Act. Councillors would be aware that we did hold some information sessions on the LCZ last year. So, yes, we have had that. Was it a consultation to get the feedback to make the changes? That wasn't the direct purpose of it. Certainly there's been a number of conversations with a lot of residents, primarily Adriana's had that with lots of residents, and certainly that's been part of the consideration. But now we're moving on to the exhibition period. Provide those submissions in support or against or varied in between so that they can be properly considered. Having a very long and objecting conversation with us directly is not as useful as putting a written representation in. So having a conversation with us, certainly about it, you know, we're happy to have the conversations with people, but sort of trying to challenge us to change our mind is not, you're better channeling your energy into putting a representation in, because we can't change it now, because the draft LPS has been accepted by the Planning Commission and they've put it on an exhibition. So we don't have the ability to do that. The best way you can do that is put it in a written representation, because not only do we hear it, the elected members hear it, and the Planning Commission hears it. So best to channel energy through that. That's not to say we're not happy to have a conversation.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. In November 2019, we produced a document called the Kingborough Draft Local Provision Schedule Supporting Report. On page 36 of the report, one of the policies in its policy CV, I don't know what CV stands for, sorry, CV 4.1 says that the state and local government, in consultation with the communities, to determine an agreed set of criteria for determining the relative significance of important landscapes and key landscape values. Did we ever do that?
Ms. Tullamore.
Did we work with the community to determine that, or did we decide with the government to determine that?
Through you, Mayor, that's a document from 5 years ago, and
yes,
it's worth noting we do have a new supporting document because a lot has changed and evolved, and a lot has changed and evolved with the Commission as well. It would be fair to say that the goalposts have certainly been moved since 2019 as they've gone through the process with other planning schemes and other municipalities. So a lot of what's in that has changed, not just at our end, but also the TPC end, so I think that's worth acknowledging. Was there a formal consultation? No, there wasn't. This exhibition period will act as part of that to get that. But since the time of the 2019 document, the TPC has certainly provided more information and decisions around that, including the LCZ, and we know that from the Huon Valley report that has come from the TPC, which made the decisions, there was some much better clarifying details about the application of the LCZ and what was considered landscape. Right.
So if I
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. If I can just finish with this, to paraphrase the key message then, you can complain or whinge that you weren't involved in the past, whether that is right or wrong, but this is your chance to do it now. Do not think that you have no chance of your representation being heard or you or your representation not making a difference, because that's a false assumption, maybe cynical, but false. So get in now. Think of it. Think about it. And I understand all representations are public, correct? Yeah. So keep in mind what you say in it. Don't sort of slag off your neighbour or something like that, because that'll be made public. And make your case now, and that it will get fair representation. Is it possible, theoretically, that a controversial zone like an LCZ could be dramatically altered by enough representations? How does that work?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, it won't be done on numbers. The TPC will need to consider it within its planning merits, within the provisions of the Act and what the guidelines are for applying that. So it's certainly, I doubt, I couldn't categorically say, I don't work for the TPC. If they get 15 or they get 1,500, their basis decision would not necessarily be on the number. It needs to be on planning merit.
Yeah, it has to be on the basic logic of the argument. So, like, one representation alone could make major differences in the eyes of the TPC. Do they then... we will then take those representations. We will then make some changes. Do they have the power, once we then submit our final mapping, to make further changes based on those representations?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, they'll receive our report that comes to the chamber with the recommendations, and they can choose to take it or leave it. They're making the decision.
Yep.
All we are is just channeling, summarising, providing some suggestions, and it's worth noting that council itself can make its own representation against the planning scheme. So there might be other changes or other things that aren't working in the planning scheme. We can have the ability to do that as well.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate indulging with all those questions. This is obviously not a small thing right now, and I wish council every success. And I do know that council officers are going to be pulling late hours over the next 2 months. I want to thank them in advance. I know that the CEO will be supporting them. I know his heart for them is big, and so it'd be nice to if the councillors could, as representatives, come along and just chit-chat to people so that, not that we can answer any technical questions, but it would be good for us to be included in that, and I just encourage my peers to pop along to make yourself seen and heard as well. And I'll end with those questions. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you to the staff as well for what is a massive body of work. And without sounding like a broken record, the draft local provision schedule, this is our opportunity, everyone within the community, this is our opportunity to to give our feedback and provide our opinions. It's a 60-day time frame. It starts on Wednesday. That's this Wednesday, the 9th of October, and the exhibition period will conclude on Monday, the 9th of December. So I strongly encourage everybody who's listening, keep apprised of the council's social media pages, jump on the council website. I simply googled Kingborough new planning scheme and up comes already the incoming Tasmanian planning scheme on the website, but when you try and click on the maps, be aware that it says on our website at the moment the revised version of this mapping will be available from Wednesday. The start of the public exhibition period, and that's Wednesday the 9th of October. So if you do jump on the website right now, worth doing, but be aware that it's on Wednesday that that those changes will be made. So you might be looking at old information if you log on tonight. But really, if you are, I'm so glad we had that clarification before about, do you have to live in the municipality? Not necessarily. Do you have to be a homeowner? Not necessarily. You could be a renter. Whoever you are, if you have an interest, please provide your feedback, provide your submission. You don't have to be a planning expert. This is the opportunity for all of us, whether we're planning experts or not, to have our say. So, for example, if you care about the environment, say that. If you care about noise emissions in your neighbourhood, say that. If you care about all of the other zones that we've heard about tonight, say that. This is an opportunity for all of us to participate, and that way, that's how we know that we've been able to shape this outcome. I think it's always a risk that because planning seems so so difficult and so lofty, it's very easy to just say, look, that's above my pay grade, I'm not going to participate. Well, if that happens, then of course, then it would be a fair criticism to say, well, the TPC is running this thing. But now we have this 60-day period for all of us to participate, and we can all help manage this just like the TPC does. So I really want to encourage people to take their agency and take their passion and provide their submission. Jump on the council website, follow the council's social media pages or look in the public notices of the newspaper to find out how to make your representation. And it does not have to be some expert treatise. It could be as simple as what you'd write on the back of a serviette saying, I believe strongly that, you know, our native wildlife is important and I want to see protections for that. Or I care strongly about noise emissions and I want to see protection for that. Whatever is your passion, make your voice heard. So the 60-day time frame commences on Wednesday, and I certainly will be trying to get along to some of those information sessions. But I do note that what was said by council officers just before about those information sessions, it sounds like there'll be broad information. But if you have specific things about, you know, how do I build a shed or how do I subdivide, make an appointment with the council, phone up the council or jump on the website and make an appointment to have that more at-length discussion at an appropriate time. Thanks very much, and once again, thank you to the council officers for all their hard work.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Just very briefly, I'd just like to echo the comments that councillors have made in relation to the work that the staff have put in relation to this, and I know the length of time that it's taken, and everyone here greatly appreciates all of that that work, and I think that this is obviously a very complex issue, and we are trying within the 60-day period that we have available to make it as simple as possible for members of the community to understand what all of this means. And once the maps go up on Wednesday, I think that hopefully, as councillors have seen at a workshop, we had an example of the maps and the technology that we've been able to use to for people to click on the maps and see what it was before and then bring a little slider across to see what the zoning will be now. And that's quite innovative in the way that we've been able to approach that. We are going above and beyond because we understand that this is not only a very complex issue but one that is very important to a number of people in the community. So as others have said, I do encourage residents to
make a submission. Firstly, have it go on the website and have a look. But as Ms. Tyler Moore and Mr. Stander have said, if you're not technologically literate, then you can come into the chambers and have a look at the maps or go to one of the information sessions. But if you do have extensive questions about your own property, as others have said, you know, do you want to know whether you can still build a shed or do this or that or subdivide, then it's probably more appropriate to make an appointment to come and see a member of our planning staff so that they can take you through. I'm going to get new microphones one day, so that they can take you through in greater detail the information that you need. So thank you very much to the staff. Thank you to councillors for their contributions. And Councillor Street, did you want to sum up? Okay, if not, I will put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much. That now takes us to page 161, Copping Refuse Disposal Site Joint Authority Proposed Rule Changes, with a recommendation on page 163. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Antoli and a seconder in Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Can you hear me all right? Is this working?
Yep.
Okay. So this document aims to obtain Kingborough Council's approval for amendments to the rules of the Copping Refuse Disposal Site Joint Authority. The amendments are intended to separate the roles of the authority secretary and the board secretary of Southern Waste Solutions, and the purpose is the change aligns with key priority of sustaining the natural environment while facilitating development. The amendments are described as substantial, necessitating a comprehensive review process, and the document outlines the steps taken to ensure the transparency and compliance with stat requirements, including advertising the changes. The rationale behind separating the roles of the authority secretary and the board secretary is to increase, according to the report, flexibility within the authority's governance structure while retaining safeguards for oversights. So it's all a bit legal and it's all a bit above my pay grade in some respects, so we just have to sort of accept that the authority has done the legal work to justify what they're saying. So I'm not going to in any way, shape or form oppose the work. But as we are a financial stakeholder, we and the other councils as shareholders need to approve these changes, and I recommend the changes to council as described.
Thank you. Further contributions? If not, I will put the recommendation. It was moved by Councillor Antoli and seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Noting that Councillor Midgley was out of the room for that. That takes us now to the appendices with a recommendation on page 223. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox, seconder in Councillor Dean. Any questions on the appendices? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This is just a quick question relating to Mayor's activities 15th of August. So this is going back a fair ways. I just wondered if there was any update you would care to provide regarding the meeting on 26th of August with Ben Smith, CEO of Basketball Tasmania.
Thank you. Yes, that was just a meeting. I haven't met with Mr. Smith for, I think I might have, quite some time ago. And he wanted to discuss, obviously, the growth of basketball in southern Tasmania and availability of courts at the Kingborough Sports Centre. And we were able to provide him with an update in relation to where we're at with the Jack Jumpers High Performance Centre. Further questions? No? Okay. Moving on then, there were no notices of motion. And that takes us to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Then in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. Mover in Councillor Fox, seconder in Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Aye. Against?
motion is carried. So in accordance with Kingborough Council's meeting audio recordings guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. So thank you very much to the members of the community who have been with us this evening. The open session of Council is now adjourning at 6:59pm, which means unfortunately you need to leave us. Thank you very much for your attendance, and thank you to those who have been watching.